Hello and welcome back to a new episode of Brain Drops. With you, your usual hosts, me, Leonard, and with me, as always, is Dom. Hey, Dom, how are you doing?
Hey, Leonard, good to hear your voice again. I'm amazing. Hope you're good too.
Yes, I'm really excited actually today because we have a very exciting guest. Usually, for most people, I could just say the name and they know what's up, but I'm gonna just say a couple of accomplishments he had throughout his career. He won the NCAA championship. He was drafted in the NBA, and then he had a long and very successful career all over Europe. And yeah, I think that speaks for itself. He will have a lot of interesting thoughts for us, some brain drops, and we want to squeeze some knowledge out of him. Please welcome with me Khaled El Amin. Hey, Khaled, thanks for taking some time for us.
Yes, no problem at all. Leonard, thank you for having me on. And Dom, thank you for having me on. It's such an honor and a pleasure to be talking to you guys.
Thanks a lot, Khaled. I mean, I can also, you know, I have to say what Leonard just double that up. Words cannot describe how excited I am to have you on the show. And yeah, I think that's going to be a good one.
For sure.
Let's do it.
Dom, you had the icebreaker. I really like this. Get us on the roll.
Khaled, I would like to take you back to the season 2014-2015. We were playing in the Lokhalle against Ulm. And this was the situation our coach likes to bring up. And I actually saw it as well, what happened. It was after a timeout. There was in the second quarter, there were still 1 minute and 39 seconds to play. And we were in the timeout, and you know, all of our players were already back on the court after the timeout. I think we were down two or something like that. Okay. And you know, as you usually did, you always took your time, you know, you used the towels and
the veteran move,
get a little extra rest. And then you stepped on the court as the last player, and you said something to coach that he remembers quite well. You told him, "Coach, I'm going to take over now." And coach told me that he looked at you, and the only thing he said was, "Well, okay." and what happened then in these 1 minute and 39 seconds, you scored 7 points in a row for us. You didn't miss, of course. You turned the momentum of the game around. At halftime, we were up by three. The fans were just ecstatic when we went into the locker room. And in the end, you know, we won 92-80 against Ulm, and you ended up having 28 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. You basically did some damage there. Just take us back through this situation. How was it for you?
Well, you know, just thinking about that, I do remember, you know, telling coach at some point in the game, I didn't know it was, you know, with 1 minute and 29 seconds or 30 seconds left to go. But I just, you know, as a player, you know, being that I played so many seasons and had so much experience, you have the feeling, and of when to turn it on and when it was your turn to, lead the team, whether it was scoring, whether it was assisting, whether it was defense. And, like I said, just having the experience of playing so many games and just knowing it was my time to try to ignite us, because it was just that point in the game where we were either going to, like you said, turn the momentum or allow Ulm, which was, you know, a big team and, you know, they had a big budget and they were definitely had a bigger roster and was a deeper team than us. But at that moment, I just really felt, you know, like it was my turn, and it was, you know, it was a great 1 minute and 30 seconds. Like you said, we were able to turn the momentum. And it allowed our guys to have more confidence coming into the second half. And we were able to, you know, take control of that game. And it was a very big victory for us. And I think that allowed coach to understand that, you know, I still had something left in the tank.
Yeah, you basically did back then. Yeah, that's for sure.
So, Khaled, what are you doing right now after your career?
Well, right now, you know, I'm doing some high school basketball coaching. Mm-hmm. I'm coaching my son, who he's a freshman. right now, which is a ninth grader. And I'm also doing some work as a basketball analyst with CBS, which is a very big national TV station. And I do inside college basketball. And we follow college basketball night in and night out and talk about the players, talk about the teams. And so, you know, I'm just staying busy with basketball. And I think that was the only logical way for me to go to stay around the game because I love the game so much. And just trying to give back where I can, Leonard and Dom, and be around the game because I just think that's my place. And, you know, have such a love for the game and so much experience that, you know, talking basketball isn't work for me. It's definitely a passion, and I love doing what I do.
And how was this change of perspective for you? Let's say it like this, because we had Harper Kemp on the show, and he just retired, like I think 1 or 2 years ago, and he talked a little bit about the challenges that a retirement brings. Since and you even had an even longer career, so. How was that for you?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's still ongoing, Leonard, you know, you know, as some of us are more prepared and they're taking their time and setting things up for after they get done playing. But for me, I wasn't sure actually what I was going to do. Like you said, I played 17 seasons professionally from the NBA to Europe. And, you know, I knew I wanted to stay around the game, but I didn't know if that was going to be coaching. I didn't know if that was just going to, you know, continue to do my summer basketball camps and clinics here in Minnesota. But I just wanted to stay around the game. And, you know, I had an opportunity to coach my old high school that I attended. And that really lit a fire for me in wanting to, you know, help the younger generation out and wanting to be, you know, wanted them to use my experience. And I had so much of it. Why not give back? So, when I decided to take on coaching, it was just like a breath of fresh air. You know, it was definitely different from playing because I couldn't control the game like I could by playing. But, you know, having that sense of direction on the court and when your team, you know, when you practice something and they do it in the game and you see that it works and you see that, you know, all the philosophy that you put into the practice, you put into the team. And when that goes on the court and you succeed and you win, it's like a drug, you know, you get, you can't control it. You want to do it more and more. So, you know, it has definitely revitalized me, wanting to be a better coach. And, you know, I kind of, took a lot of the things that I learned. And you might think that it's, you know, I'm just saying this because, you know, I played for Göttingen, but, you know, playing for Coach, he's a phenomenal guy, man. You know, I really took a lot my last couple of years, or my 2 years being there. I took a lot from him, just how prepared he is and the time that he puts in watching film and getting his teams prepared. I think that has rubbed off on me, and I'm only doing it on a high school level, but having a work ethic as he did just really rubbed off on me. And, you know, it was, I thank him for that, you know, for having me come to Göttingen because I learned a lot from him.
Yeah, it's good to hear that you managed this transition so well and still are happy with what you do. And you said that you fell in love with the game. When did that happen? When did you fall in love with this game, and how did that happen?
Oh, yeah, it was early on. I can remember age of 4. You know, my father, he put a basketball hoop outside of our house, and you know, I have 2 older brothers. So as the younger brothers, you know, you always want to hang around the big brother and do what they do. And, you know, it was all about basketball coming up. And we used to have all the kids from the neighborhood come over and play basketball. So I was on the blacktop really early, at a really early age. And that's where the love actually kicked off right there. And, you know, once I got going and seeing the joy that it brought to me and how good I felt from playing basketball, it was a no-brainer for me to try to take it to the next level.
In earlier episodes, we had Mike Stockton here on the show, and we talked to him about the importance of the first coach for a player. Who was that for you? Who, like, basically set up your DNA for basketball, let's say? Your mindset.
Well, it was my father. It was my father first, from putting the hoop up and, you know, just watching you know, watching basketball, you know, growing up and always being around it. And you, of course, you know, you have your idols. You see Michael Jordan play, Isaiah Thomas. And so, you know, you see those good players and you try to idolize them, or you try to be like those guys. They'll do something in the game that you see, you thought it was a good move. And then I would go out, you know, outside and try to practice that move and put that into my game. So, I like to believe that I was always a student of the game, and just having my father and my family encourage me to keep going with it and keep practicing, you know, the long hours that I did was definitely helped me to become the player that I was.
Hey, Khaled, there's one thing you said. You are now a TV analyst for
yes.
college basketball.
Yes. Yes.
So what I would like to know, how is the transition being now on the TV analyzing players? Because when you were playing, you were probably listening to guys who were analyzing you, and now you probably do that with players. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's different, Dom. It really is. But you know, I'm happy with it. You know, covering college basketball is something that I love to do, being that, you know, I was able to win a national championship with the University of Connecticut in 1999. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in America, I'm kind of like a big deal in college basketball. And so it is a different experience for me, but I love it because I'm talking basketball, something that I love to do, Dom, and it's not really hard, but you definitely have to put in the time and get to know the teams and each player. Because there's so many universities and so many teams in America that, you know, it takes a little bit of time for you to get comfortable and caught up on all the teams and all the coaches and things. But once you do that, it's just like, you know, it's just like you're talking basketball with your friends, Dom. It really isn't that much hard work. You know, it's something that I've been doing for 17 years of my life and professionally. But, you know, I was playing basketball for more than, you know, 30 years of my life. So, it's definitely is a good experience, and I love being around the game.
And analyzing or other players, what are you looking for in a player, or what impresses you in players sometimes?
Well, I mean, you know, it depends. It depends what position are they, you know, good scorers. You know, if they're a point guard, are they running the team, controlling the team, being the leader? You know, and then all of the coaches out there who have, you know, terrific systems that they use. And it's just great to see. And it's an honor for me to go in and be so close to these greats, you know, great coaches, great teams, great universities. So it just makes for an exciting experience for me being able to do that. Because like you said, I was a player, and now having the opportunity to talk about different players and hype them up and really understand what they are going through, and actually having the crowd, having the fans in America relating to them, telling them about, you know, how student athletes, what they go through on a daily basis and how they have to definitely control and mix, you know, academics with basketball. It's not always easy. And I know from the fans from the outside looking in, all they see is, you know, the players playing basketball. But it's so much more that goes into a student athlete's life that, you know, sometimes their story needs to be told, and fans need to be reminded about, you know, how hard they work. And it's definitely been a great ride so far.
Yeah, I have another question. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but since you're an analyst now, I assume that you are also exposed to, let's say, to a lot of advanced stats. My question now, is that true? Is that first of all true that you're exposed to these kind of advanced stats? You know what I mean?
Advanced stats like what? Like what? Like analytics or what?
Analytics.
What do you mean, advanced stats?
Exactly, analytics. You know, I have a really good friend of mine. He's really into that. Let's put it like this. And he's mm-hmm. always telling me that the game has developed, you know.
Maybe for the listeners, we're talking about Johan. That's also the coach Khaled, of course, talked about earlier.
Yeah, that the game is evolving, that, you know, long twos are maybe not the first option these days, you know, something like that. And my question is, if you are also, as an analyst, if you're exposed to these advanced stats, and if you are,
As an analyst, yes, we do see those type of stats come up. You know, we're able to, we're privy to a lot of those stats. But at the same time, Dom, I'm an old school guy, and I'm a guy who really, appreciates basketball at its rarest form. And, you know, the mid-range jump shot, that is a shot that now here in America is not, it's a forgotten art. You know, it's either the three-point shot, you're shooting three, or you're getting all the way to the basket for a layup. So that in-between shot, that's a shot that has given countless players, you know, a multi-years playing in the NBA because they're able to hit that shot. And players that use the mid-range jump shot are successful, and who can shoot that shot are successful because, you know, you can't always, we know as a basketball player, we're not always going to be able to get all the way to the basket. And let's be real, not all of us are great three-point shooters. So being able to hit that mid-range shot is something I thought was always important for my game, but anyone else's game. And so to answer your question, yes, we are privy to a lot of the analytics statistics, but I'm a big guy of the normal statistics, the assists. What type of contributions is he making when the ball is not in his hand or when he's not scoring? So those are the type of things that I'm looking for more than just the stats.
Yeah, and talking about your mid-range game, that was always spot on, of course.
Yeah, I watched a couple of highlights earlier to prepare for this podcast today, and I was just amazed again.
I mean, you know, with me being a shorter player, you know, I'm not your tallest player, I'm not your quickest player, I'm not your fastest player, but I always just try to play to my strengths and wanted to, understand what my work was. And so, you know, I never tried to be something that I wasn't. I just wanted to do the things that I did, do them well, and so I could be productive on the court.
So we already touched on this. You played basically two seasons here in Göttingen, and of course you worked pretty intensely with Dom, and the way I viewed it, you and Dom had a pretty intense relationship.
Oh yeah.
Dom also came over to the States to work with you and your son, and maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that, about your relationship with Dom, working with him, and his approaches to the weight room.
Oh yeah. Well, I think coming in to Göttingen, you know, I kind of understood a couple of seasons earlier that the importance of, getting ready for the game, getting ready for competition. And I think a lot of the things that strength and conditioning coaches that I had in the past, I wouldn't always listen to them. I was young. I had a lot of energy. I wasn't always icing. I wasn't always doing my preventative injury things. I wasn't always foam rolling. I wasn't always stretching always. So later in my career, of course, with experience, I learned that those things are very important. And those things go hand in hand with performing well and recovering and being able to play your best. So coming into Göttingen, I understood I was 35 years old. I needed to take care of my body on the court, but off the court as well. So, yes. I did want to have a close relationship with the strength and conditioning coach, and Dom, you know, happened to be that guy. I had got injured. I had pulled my hamstring a little bit, tweaked it, and Dom, he worked with me tirelessly on improving, activating my glutes, activating my hamstrings, and just being prepared and being ready. And so, I owe him so much because I felt like he helped me come back from that injury, but he also helped me after I was healthy 100%. I stayed playing at the top level because of those drills, those preventative measures. And, to say the least, we had a terrific relationship. He was almost one of my best friends, in Göttingen while I was playing. You know, I really focused on being prepared and always wanting to play my best. And Dom was a focal point of that because of the things that we've done. So Dom, I owe you a lot. I might have told you before, but if not, I'm telling you now, I love you, man. And thank you for all your help because you helped. Aww. You extended my career those years that I was there. And I wouldn't have been so successful in Göttingen if you were not there. So I appreciate everything that you've done.
Well, I'm melting away for the moment. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate your words. Yes, that means means a ton to me. And like you said, for some reason there was this one game where you at the end, like you said, you tweaked your hamstring a little bit. And back then, you know, that was my first year. It's not that I had a lot of experience, but you know, I was just reading and I was trying to find out how I could help him. And then I came up with a few things that you really liked, I suppose. You know, you for yep. For him, it for you, that was the time when foam rolling just came around. And I was actually, of course, looking at it, and you know, right now this would maybe not be my first option of help, you know, if I had to deal with that again, but you know, I would still apply it if it works. And for you, it seemed to work, and then in the next day you were able to play. And you didn't have to miss the game because you were ready, and you also had a strong game after that. So that was somehow how our connection, I think, started. And then I remember you also wanted to have a little lift one day before the game, and that was just something that worked for you. And I was happy to give you that, of course, because it was all for the team. Yeah, and yeah, that was our little story. And thanks again for the words.
And just to, Leonard, just to let you know, the respect that I had for Dom was, you know, after I came back and we finished the season, you know, we talked about him, and he ended up, like you said, coming to Minnesota and working with my son. That's how much respect and that's how much confidence that I had in him, that what he does and what he's doing, it works. Mm-hmm. And so I brought him up and he worked with my son, which was a high school junior at the time. He was going into a senior year, and he really helped him that summer. You know, he put on a couple of pounds of muscle, but he was able to understand the importance of stretching, the importance of activating your muscles to get out there and play. And it's going to help you play at a high level. So he really helped my son understand the importance of those things. And I thank you again, Dom.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate your words. Yeah, he basically mentioned it already after you, because you know, in the previous podcast we were actually talking, or I made the assumption that, you know, players actually start to understand how important their body is once they got injured. Once they get injured, you know what I mean? Yes, after that, I do have the feeling that you just start to appreciate your body a little better, and that you then start to take care of the body a little better. Is that, would you also say that happened to you after the big injury?
Oh, for sure, 100%. You know, Dom, come on. When you're young, you know, you have all the injury, rarely get hurt, you know, because your body is just so strong. But over the years, I put a lot of miles on my legs. I put a lot of miles traveling the world playing basketball. So it was just a matter of time to where I did get injured, because, you know, the game is so physical. We're playing so hard, and this is what we do. So after I got hurt, but when you get injured, you really realize, you know, how important each bone is, important for your body, each ligament is, because, you know, if something is injured, you're not going to be able to perform to your maximum capability. So yes, after I sustained my injury, I always focused on, you know, being ready and using those preventative measures to have that, you know, percentage of injury go down. And I'm just happy that I was able to make that connection with, once I got injured, to take care of my body better so it wouldn't happen again.
Mm. And if you went back to playing now, would you do things differently?
Well, would I do things differently? I would just do the same things that I did when I was such an experienced player. When I came to Göttingen, and you know, I would make sure that I was always doing those things to make sure that I activate all my muscles, that I'm getting my rest at night, that I'm icing, that I'm doing everything I can to take care of my body, because this is what we use to make our money. This is how we feed our family. So yes, I would always be a little bit more concerned about my body, even when I was younger. That's the only thing that I would do different.
We called our first episode, Your Body is Your Bank Account. You remember that quote from Coach?
Oh yeah, Coach. You know, and that's another thing about Johan. You know, he always puts things in perspective, and he does it in such an easy and understandable way that, you know, he's like a player's coach, man. Guys who understand the game and guys who are mature, they love playing for him because he understands that, you know, he wants to be prepared. He wants you to succeed, you know, but he wants you to do it in a way that it forms to your personality. And I really just, like I said, I appreciated him at the time coming in as a 35-year-old, allowing me to take the keys to the car and just and drive us and try to lead us to as many games as we could to win.
And you were pretty successful here, especially in the first season. I remember that. So we just talked about you maturing throughout your career, especially in perspective of your body. But
yep.
Now I want to touch a little bit about this, about your mental approach. So Basically, before a game, when I was young, I used to think I have to get myself really, really pumped up and, like, you know, play music and really get into this, I don't know, game mode, being really aggressive. But then I started to learn that sometimes I build too much pressure for myself, and actually I had to be a little bit more relaxed and easygoing going into the game. How do you prepare, or how did you prepare mentally before a game?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, preparing for the game, you know, I always had a routine, Leonard, you know, that I always stuck to. And I kind of had a sense of I needed to do the same things damn near every time before a game. And that was just the type of person that I was. So, you know, I would eat a certain meal during the game, and it was the salmon pasta. What was that restaurant right there, Dom, that we used to go to?
Fellini's. Fellini's.
Yes, Fellini's. Fellini's. I love their salmon pasta. Shout out to Fellini's. That was my go-to meal before the game. And, you know, also I was a big guy who thought I needed rest before the game. So I would take maybe an hour and a half nap before a game, and just to make sure that, you know, I was ready to go when the game was here. And, you know, once I got to the gym, I would just focus on, you know, whatever the game plan was and making sure that I knew how I was supposed to, you know, the game, whatever it was, if it was defense, the defensive scheme, I was making sure that I was on point with that. I knew what was going on. And offensively, where do we have the advantage at? Where do we want to attack this team at? So I was always trying to be prepared and understood what we needed to do to actually get the W. So that was my how I got ready for a game. And I think that it was, you know, it was successful, because I believe that the majority of the time we were able to play well and do the things that we wanted to do to get the win.
And how did you handle pressure? I mean, you played in a couple of really, really big games, championship games, you name it. How did you, like, of course, your routine, I guess, did not change before a big game, but was it tougher for you to mentally calm down?
Well, not really. I used to always tell myself to be in the moment, stay in the moment. And no matter how big the game was, you know, I always try to understand that this is it's a basketball game, that, you know, we're playing basketball. You have been doing this for so long, and so you're ready for this. And so I would try to give myself confidence with that side, and just mentally knowing that leading up to the game, those days of practice that I put in the work, that I did everything that I needed to do so I could play my best on the weekend, on a Saturday or on a Sunday. So my week of preparation is what helped me mentally prepare for the game, so I would be feel like I was ready and have the confidence to perform.
Yeah, okay, I understand. That gave you some safety in a sense.
Yes.
Another thing, another guest, Harper, said about you, and he said you were always the guy with the youngest energy on the team, having really positive emotions. And talking about the brain, me coming from the psychology perspective, the way it works, it's that the negative emotions dominate positive emotions, and you were always a guy with very positive emotions. When did you learn this, that this positive emotion was so important for you and for your teammates that you play well together? Because as soon as something negative comes in, you know, your brain tends to focus on that.
Yeah. Damn, Leonard, that's a great question, man. I think
he made his way. Leonard is getting there, Colin.
And, you know, thinking back when I was younger, growing up, you know, Leonard, I was always the smallest player on the court, no matter what. I was always the shortest guy. So I had to have kind of an optimistic point of view playing against bigger guys all the time, you know. And so I always thought that, you know, I put the work in, you know, I've been playing this game. I've been practicing this game. So I'm ready. And, you know, you do have, as human beings, we do have sometimes negative, I don't want to say negative, but you do have these doubts sometimes. Yeah. And so to get over those doubts or those fears, you know, you have to just meet it head on. And that's the way I felt. I had to just, if it was a bigger guy, I still had to learn how to play against bigger guys. And I think this is when playing against my older brothers, playing with them, playing against their friends, it kind of molded me and I learned how to play against bigger guys. So I had the confidence of always going out and being successful because I've done it my whole life, Leonard. So, you know, coming to the big stage in a big game, I didn't think about those things. I wanted to attack whatever I needed to do to be successful in that game, or, you know, like I said, the game plan, how was I going to put that into play for me to be successful personally and team-wise? So it was just a thing of staying positive and having that energy of giving that to my teammates too. You know, I learned that early on. You might have a good game, but if your teammates don't play well, you might not get the win. So I always wanted to have that type of, or be the type of leader where I uplifted my teammates, because if my teammates play well, I knew I could get my game going. So I wanted them to do well first, get them off first, and then I would be able to bring us home at the end. And it kind of worked. That recipe worked for my career. And I think that was the biggest thing mentally that I had to do, was being able to give my teammates confidence. And I knew my confidence was always at a high level.
Yeah. And now you actually touched also already on the next question. You said that you focused in the beginning, especially of the game, on your teammates, to make them feel and play good. And we also, again, I'm quoting Harp. He said, usually I felt I was like a smart guy on the court. And then you came to the team and he said, Khaled sometimes made me feel stupid. Because, you know, you see all the details on the court. You see everything. And I mean, I practiced with you a couple of weeks, and I mean, that's something I saw right away. That's a fact, let's say. But how did you interact with the guys? You know, like, for example, telling Harp, hey, Harps, this is maybe how you've done it all your life, but there's a better way, mm-hmm. you know? How did communicate this, that he didn't feel maybe offended or something?
Exactly. That's a great question, because you have to have, you know, you have to have a relationship. You have to build a relationship up with your players, with your teammates, because you can't be that guy. You can't be the asshole, Leonard, who's just always yelling at your teammates, do this, do that, and you don't have a relationship with them. It's not going to work like that. So, and this is another, you know, a shout out to Coach Johan. You know, early on the season when he brought the team together, we would do team building exercises. We will go out and have these team building and chemistry building moments where we got to know each other off the court, and that allowed us to become a better teammates on the court. So when I had to speak to Harper in an intense moment, and I might, you know, be, you know, talking loud or being forceful with him, but he understood it was coming from a good place because we understood each other and we knew each other, and he knew I wasn't being an asshole. I was just wanting to win and wanting us to play better. So having that relationship and getting your players to understand that you have their best interests at heart is something that takes a little bit of time, and all the great teams do it, and all the great teams have that great chemistry and great bond with each other.
Hmm. Have you ever worked with a mental coach? Maybe not even personally, but also like, you know, there are coaches that come into a team or something like that, talking about team building?
Yes, we definitely have. You know, we did that in a few countries that I was in. We did it in Turkey that I can remember, and a couple other countries. But, you know, going back to the mental side, you know, the night before a game, Leonard, I would always envision myself playing well. I would always envision myself, you know, hitting my 3-point shot, hitting the open 3-point shot, getting to the rim, creating and finding teammates and leading the team to victory. I would always envision myself before I go to sleep doing that. And, you know, for the most part of my career, I was able to do that in the, when the game came, you know. So I think, you know, you have to see yourself doing well and imagine yourself playing well in order for you to go out there and do it also.
Oh, wow. I think this is a very, very great brain drop, especially for young players or any player listening to this. Because also from, you know, I touched on it earlier from the, let's say, brain perspective, this is a very, well, underrated method. Because when you envision yourself, like you said, hitting that 3-point shot, sometimes, especially also when you dream about it, it feels so realistic. And also, studies have proven that your brain actually learns by just doing that. So you doing this your whole career, I mean, it doesn't explain the whole thing, but it's, if a great player says something using this method, I think that's a great way to put it.
That's interesting. Oh, yeah. Carla, you never told me about that. Interesting. I didn't know.
Dom, I can't tell you every day. I gotta keep something.
Exactly. That's true.
Nah, just joking.
Carla, I also do have a question for you. I read an internet online. It was on the website was called City Pages. It doesn't matter. But you basically said that in Europe the game of basketball is kind of different. It's all about the team, you said back then.
Yes.
Could you maybe further comment on the differences between college basketball and NBA compared to Europe?
Oh wow. Yes. Well, what I meant by those remarks, I was saying that European basketball is more team basketball, meaning that it doesn't matter if a player scores 40 and lose. No one's going to remember the player who scores 40 and he loses the game. You know, it's all about winning. I think a player who averages 6 points per game and wins a championship, I think he is more celebrated than that player who scores 40 and loses every game. I just don't see, you know, what value that holds. Or in European basketball, that doesn't hold any value. So being a winner and playing the right way in Europe is the way to go. And I think in America, we have come, especially coming up at that point in my career, you know, American basketball was more of, you know, individual, you know, good players, you know, Michael Jordan early in his career, he was a scorer. He was the guy that, you know, scored all the points. But at the end of the season, you know, they would get beat in the playoffs and they would go home early until he realized that winning was more important. And he got his teammates involved. He didn't average as many points, but he was more successful and he was won championships because he had better teams. And so, that being said, I think it says, you know, it goes hand in hand. Well, what were we just talking about? And so, winning is a high regard. It's held at a high regard in Europe. And in America, being a good player was, you know, no matter if you won or lost, was held at a high regard, you know? So that was the difference in between, European basketball and American basketball, in my opinion at that time. But now, as I'm looking, the difference between college and basketball, college basketball and NBA basketball, I think college basketball is focused around the team, you know, and the university that you play for, because you're not getting paid. You're still playing for the love of the game, and you want to have aspirations of becoming pro. So you're playing hard as you can because of that. But when you get to the NBA, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, the NBA is such, you know, they have the greatest players in the world. Don't get me wrong about that, but they don't play each and every game like it's their last game. And I think that's the difference between college basketball and NBA basketball. College basketball, every game counts. You're trying to make it to the NCAA tournament. You're trying to win your conference. And so each game matters. And I think it's the same going from European basketball. You know, you might be in EuroLeague or you might not play in EuroLeague. You might just play in a German league. But still, each game counts because you want to get the highest seed and you want to, you know, go through the cup. You might have an opportunity to win the cup. So each game counts. And there's so many games in the NBA that I don't think each game counts like it does in other leagues around the world.
So all money aside, you played in NBA and Europe, but for sure a lot longer in Europe. Did you enjoy playing in Europe more than in the NBA?
I can't say I enjoyed it more. I mean, it was my dream to make it in the NBA, Leonard, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
That's, you know, playing with the likes of Michael Jordan and seeing Magic Johnson and all these great basketball players. Just getting to that league was a, you know, was a dream come true. But I understand it was the greatest players in the world, you know, that it takes, that you have to be one of the best players in the world to stay there. So, yes, I was kind of sad when I didn't stay in the NBA, but coming to Europe, Europe revitalized my game. Mm. And they really appreciated, they really appreciated me for what I can do being 178 centimeters, you know? So I was able to still control the game. I was still able to, you know, have my imprint on the game, my control on the game because, you know, the Europe basketball, the type of basketball it was, it allowed me to still be considered, you know, a big time player or valuable, you know, because of what I brought on the court. So, like I said, I really appreciate the European game, and I don't know where I would be today without the European game.
Mm. And one more question regarding to that. You know, you always played for a big college, UConn, in front of a big crowd. You even won a championship there. You were getting the exposure to make decisions when the game was on the line. Do you think that also prepared you really good for what was coming in Europe?
I think it all went hand in hand. My whole experience from college basketball to being a pro, that all helped me prepare for the European game. But once I got to Europe, like I said, I understood the concept of team basketball a little bit more. And I think that made me a better player, and it made me make my teammates better. And consequently, I was better because they were better, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And talking about spectators or fans, how much of an input did that have on your game? Because the second time you came, I mean, you came back to Göttingen. You said this in an interview right after the game.
It feels incredible. You know, all the love that the fans are giving me, I really appreciate that. And I hope they feel the love that I have on the court. So I'm just trying to give back the energy that they're giving to me.
Thank you for coming back.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you. And I'm just trying to give it all back on the court, you know.
No, I definitely remember that. You know, I was coming back to Göttingen. I was playing for a team in Kosovo, and you know, the team, that their organization wasn't as professional as the German league, as Göttingen. So me coming back, well, like I said, it was it kind of revived me a little bit, and just saw all the love that the fans had, that the BG fans had for me. I think, you know, the BG website, when they said that I was coming back, I think we broke the website. They had so many people trying to get
that
online,
true,
and
yeah,
try to get on to be, yeah, the website got broken. So I saw all the love that the fans had for me. So, you know, I had to come ready to play. I had to come and make a difference for the team that year. And,
I hope we break the podcast host now.
I hope so too. But it was just such a great feeling coming back to Göttingen and seeing the crowd and the welcome back signs that they were holding. And I was just happy that I was able to have a good game in that game for the fans, and it happened to work out great.
And before we started the episode, we talked about that the BBL wanted to resume this season, but yeah, of course they have to play ghost games, I guess you would call it. How would that affected you personally playing in those games?
Yeah, Leonard, that's a good question. But it would be tough, you know, to playing without your fans, without the fanatics, without your supporters. It would just be a different environment. It would just be like, you know, a scrimmage game or, you know, a pickup game where it's just the players in the gym and a few of the, you know, team's staff. So it would definitely have a big influence on me, but you still have to be a professional. You know, you're still getting paid and having an opportunity to take care of your family. So playing in front of, you know, just the team wouldn't be fun. But, you know, it's the just situation that we're in right now due to, you know, COVID-19, and God willing, it won't last as long as everyone is saying it's going to last.
I heard Draymond Green talking about it, because in San Francisco, they were about to play one of these games before the NBA got canceled or postponed or whatever. And he said they asked him to make a playlist to play during the game, to play some music. Do you think that would have helped?
To play some music during the games without the fans?
Yeah, kind of like open gym flow.
Yeah, that's a very interesting, very interesting. But I don't think that that's going to do much to, you know, help the players, because the players have eyes and you can see in the stands still. And a arena being empty and you're playing a game still has a different feel of, you know, of a packed house.
Yeah, for sure. Dom, you got any more questions up your sleeve?
Yeah, there's one thing I would like to know. How, you know, because when I visit you, Carl, obviously your son Ishmael, after I left, I think he started his college career. He went to Ball State and he played there for 3 years. Correct me if I'm wrong. My question now is, you know, you being an analyst, being a father, being a professional player, how is the relationship to Ishmael? You probably talk a lot, right, about the game.
Yes.
You probably analyze it as well. Just comment on that a little bit.
Oh yeah, I mean, we have a good relationship. You know, that's my son.
yeah, you know, I mean, obviously.
No, I'm just saying,
you guys misunderstood me.
No, Dom, I'm saying that, you know, being that he is my son, I think sometimes I might talk to him a little bit too much about the game. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, you know, as a father, you want your son to succeed and be successful. And, you know, you want to help him so much because he's your baby. So I think sometimes I talk to him a little bit too much about things he should be doing. But we have a great relationship. Like you said, he had 3 seasons in Ball State where, you know, this last season he has the best season in his 3 years. You know, he averaged 15 points. He shot well above 40% from three. And, you know, he just had a real breakout year. And I'm really happy at the progress that he's making. And hopefully he can continue to make the progress and he can become a good enough player to where he can possibly become a professional. And so, you know, that's what he's aiming for. That's what he wants. So I'm going to do everything in my power to help him.
Okay. Yeah, you misunderstood me in the beginning. I was obviously, I wanted to know how, you know, if you sit together, if you analyze a game, if you talk a lot about it, or.
Oh, yeah. We definitely do that. We do that all the time, Dom. And you know, he would play a game and I would watch it back, you know, because maybe I wasn't able to watch it live. So I would watch it back and I would sit down and talk to him about different plays on the court and different situations in the game that came about. And so, we do that all the time. And I think that's just something that a father figure or a coach or a mentor should do for a younger player and help him understand different situations. And that's how you get better, seeing yourself perform on film, whether it's good or bad, and being able to correct that or being able to withstand that and keep doing those things that you are doing well. So we do that all the time, Dom, to answer your question.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think all my questions are done. Dom, I think you're done also. So we have one last big one for you, Khaled.
Last big one.
Who is your nomination?
my nomination for.
You can also have two if you want for the podcast.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly.
Oh yeah. Okay. I will say this. I would say, I don't know if Coach Johan has been on there, but I would nominate Coach just because, you know, Coach is kind of a, you know, a big deal. I kind of figure in Göttingen. You know, I realize, you know, Göttingen with, everything that goes on, you know, we're a small university city, and we don't have the big budget, of course, like a Berlin or Munich. So we're having to do more with less. And I just, you know, want to give a shout out to Johan for having the vision and always being able to do more with less. I think he's a terrific coach. Like I said before, I think he, prepares for the game at such a high level that a lot of coaches might not do. He takes it to the extreme, and I think being successful, you have to do that. I think he's a little bit crazy, and I think you have to be crazy to be a good coach. And so, and so, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people could learn and could benefit from a lot of his tactics and the things that he used, how he prepares for a game. I think it would be good to allow young players and young coaches to hear his mindset on how he prepares and how he takes basketball, because he's a great basketball mind and he should share that with everyone. And the second nominee I'm going to nominate is David Godbo. Yes, we were teammates my two seasons in Göttingen, but he's just such a influential person for me my 2 years there. You know, he was a great teammate, he was a great friend, and he was somebody that I always could count on. No matter if he had a good game, no matter if he had a bad game, he was going to be the same person, and I appreciated that. And I think everybody should can have an opportunity to hear his brain and pick his brain, and I think everyone can benefit from his experience as well. So those are my two nominees, Dom and Leonard, and I appreciate you having me on Brain Drops.
Thank you so much. We will do our best to get these two on here, and I'm left to say thank you, Khaled, thank you, Dom, for this great episode, and to the listeners, see you again next week.
Oh yeah, I want to say to all the BG fans, I miss you, I love you. And don't be nervous if you see me in Germany soon.
Oh wow!
Oh, I'm interested. I'm interested to find out about that.
All right.
Thanks, Khaled. Okay. My pleasure.
All right, no problem. Yes. Talk to you guys soon.
Bye bye.
Yeah. Bye bye.
Bye bye.